As you can see from the video this morning, there are many successful people, or at least people that we would say are highly successful, that have struggled with failure, disappointment, and discouragement. And it's not just people like Michael Jordan and Steve Jobs who fail in the secular world. There are also many people that we would consider to be spiritual giants that also experience failure and disappointment. I'm sure you've heard of Mother Teresa, the Albanian Catholic nun, who is known mostly for her service to the poorest children in the world in the slums of Calcutta, India. You might also know that in addition to her personal work, she started a group called the Missionaries of Charity in 1950. And by 2012, this ministry consisted of 4,500 sisters that were active in over 133 countries around the world. So if there was ever a spiritual giant, Mother Teresa would certainly qualify. But around age 50, she wrote a letter to Jesus, and I'd like to share a portion of that with you this morning, which will be projected on the worship screen behind me. This is what she says: "From my childhood, you have called me and kept me for your own. And now, when we both have taken the same road, now, Jesus, I go the wrong way. They say people in hell suffer eternal pain because of the loss of God. They would go through all that suffering if they had just a little hope of possessing God. In my soul, I feel just that terrible pain of loss, of God not wanting me. That darkness that surrounds me on all sides. I can't lift my soul to God. No light or inspiration enters my soul. I speak of love for souls, of tender love for God, and I long with a deep longing to actually believe in them. What do I labor for? If there be no God, there can be no soul. If there is no soul, then Jesus, you are also not true. Heaven, what emptiness. Not a single thought of heaven enters my mind, for there is no hope. In my heart, there is no faith, no love, no trust. There is so much pain, the pain of longing, the pain of not being wanted." This is Mother Teresa. The epitome of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, a saint, canonized as a saint in the Catholic Church. This is the woman, when we say, "I want to be like Jesus," we use her as an analogy, and we say, that person is like Mother Teresa. She's a spiritual giant. And what most biographers tell us is that she didn't just have one isolated moment in which she struggled with discouragement and despair. They say that she wrestled with these thoughts her entire life, including depression. And we could name countless other spiritual giants who tell us to be suspicious of a Pollyannish view of life, where everything is lollipops and candy canes. In the Bible, a really good example is the Apostle Paul, who writes in Romans 7, beginning with verse 14, the following. This is a familiar passage. Maybe you have experienced this as well. He says, "We know that the law is spiritual, but I am unspiritual, sold as a slave to sin." Now remember who's saying this. This is the greatest missionary in all of Christian history, the one that was responsible for taking the gospel to the Gentiles of the world. He goes on, "I do not understand what I do, for what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do. This I keep doing. Although I want to do good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner being, I delight in God's law, but I see another law at work in me, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin at work within me. And then he says, "What a wretched man I am. Who will deliver me from this body that is subject to death?" And if we're honest, what we understand is that everyone deals with failure. Everyone at some point in time wrestles with discouragement. Have you ever thought to yourself, what's the point? Like, why am I doing any of this? You know, there are times when college students think this as they get to the end of the semester and they've got finals and they're under a tremendous amount of pressure. As a former college professor, I know how stressful that time is, and students would come into my office and they would be so discouraged to the point that they were thinking about just not completing their final exams, and they start to really reflect existentially, why am I doing all of this? Am I doing it for my parents? Am I doing it for me? What's going on? People in jobs who work day in and day out, they ask themselves, what's the point of it all? And there are many, many opportunities in life, every day, all day long, many opportunities for discouragement to creep in. There are some people who are discouraged because they're in a dead-end job. They had dreams of a different career, but they had to pay the bills, and so they felt that they were forced into a job where they're not really adding value back. They don't feel like they're doing anything of significance. They're just kind of going and collecting a paycheck to pay the bills. And then at the end of the day, their paycheck's not even covering the bills. What's the point of it all? And then there are people who are discouraged because their health is failing. They got a bad diagnosis, or someone that they love, their health is failing. And the doctors can't figure out what's going on. In my first appointment, right out of graduate school, I went to a little church called Dundee United Methodist Church, and I was so surprised to walk in this morning and see two of my favorite people, Mike and Bev, are visiting this morning at their timeshare. And one of the things that was most astounding to me at that church, which was mostly senior folks, is that you could go to the doctor with ailments and they could say, I don't know what's wrong with you. That never occurred to me as a young man, because every time I went to the doctor, they said, well, this is what's wrong with you. Take this pill. Come back in 10 days. Everything will be fine. But there are some people who are, their health is failing, and no matter what the doctors do, they either can't figure it out or they've done all that they can do, and they're discouraged because it's putting limitations on their life. And then there are folks that are struggling with family problems, problems with their kids, problems with their spouse, problems with their parents who are intruding on their lives and not letting them be their own person. And there are unique problems that are associated with marriage. And some people get down on their marriage and they begin to think, did I make a mistake? I'm so discouraged in my marriage. Is anything ever going to change? And this morning, because it's Mother's Day, I want to highlight the discouragement that our mothers face. Because I think of all the people around me who are uniquely vulnerable to discouragement, it's our mothers. Women are constantly faced with the unrealistic expectations of the culture. And if you listen to women who will express their frustration and weariness with you, what you might hear is that there was a time, a long time ago, when women were expected to stay home, and because they were stay-at-home caretakers, they would clean the house, responsible for cleaning the whole house and doing all the laundry and washing all the dishes, cleaning up everything, cooking dinner, taking care of their children, waiting on their husband hand and foot. I'm reminded of the show All in the Family that my parents used to watch growing up. Edith, get me a beer, right? It's just that all of these pressures of being family women. And then time went by, and it became very difficult, and in some cases impossible, for women to stay at home and have that be their full-time job. Many of them found that they had to go to work. Many were taking opportunities to go to school because education was opening to women along with the women's movements and the civil rights. There were glass ceilings that were being shattered. There's still some there, but the doors were opening and women were going to school. And then there became a new cultural expectation, which is you need to go to work. Many women felt the pressures and felt that they had to go to work. Some worked part-time jobs, some worked full-time jobs, some worked more than one job. Some had to take care of their kids by themselves because dad bailed and didn't have any help. But the previous expectations didn't magically go away. And so now women today say, I not only have to go to work all day long, just like my husband, but I come home and I'm tired. And I have to cook dinner. And I have to do the laundry and pack the lunches for the kids and bathe them and get them to sleep. And then I've got to do other things. Maybe there's work I've had to bring home or chores that I have to finish. And all the while, in many instances, husbands come home and they take a big sigh and they say, I've been at work all day, I need a rest. And then they plop on the couch. If they're there at all. And as they rest, watch the news or the sports channel, the woman continues to work and work and work and work until late at night when she collapses in bed and virtually passes out from exhaustion. And these expectations are just unrealistic. And if they're not redefined, and if women don't get help, this leads to burnout. And the burnout can lead to discouragement. And the discouragement can lead to despair. And I want to talk to the men for just a minute. And I want to remind you of something that you already know. And that is this. If you do not listen to the woman in your life and seek to understand these unrealistic expectations, And try to connect with them at a feelings level to understand them and to also then commit to being part of the solution, eventually they are going to resent you. Now, they might not tell you they resent you. Some women that I know would be very happy to tell you that they resent you. But others are a little more passive, and they will put a smile on their face. And they will bring you your coffee. And they won't be nasty. But on the inside, they're dying because they don't feel as if they have any value to you. And so, Christian men, real men, love their wives, love the mother of their children. And they're open to redefining the expectations, redrawing the boundaries, and coming up with an agreement of a better workload, a more equal workload. And that's how Christian men honor their wives. They serve them. Didn't you know that's what the Bible says? We love our wives as Christ loved the church. And how is the love of Jesus manifest in the church? Through service. Constant friend helping. But it's not just mothers, it's not just wives, it's not just women who deal with discouragement. All of us at one point or another deals with discouragement. And so I want to pause for just a minute and ask the question, what exactly is discouragement? And the easiest way to define discouragement is to talk about the gap between expectation and experience. We have an expectation of how something is going to happen, and then we have an experience that doesn't match or fulfill that expectation. There's a gap there. And in the middle of that gap, we can have an experience of discouragement or disappointment. This happened the other day. Many of you know I went away to the Monastery of the Holy Spirit for 4 days. I was gone Monday to Thursday. and my wife and kids really missed me. I was in the car all day long for about 7.5 or 8 hours, and an alert came up on my calendar. Now, what I wanted to do and what my wife expected me to do was to come straight home where she had planned and prepared a delicious meal to welcome me home. And she had written on the family whiteboard, "We missed you. Welcome home, Dad." And they were all waiting. And I got an alert on my calendar. I had forgotten that there was a very important preschool board meeting. And before I even took my suitcases out of my car, I pulled up to the church and I was here for 3.5 hours. By the time that I got home, my wife was pretty disappointed. There was an expectation, and it didn't pan out, an experience. And if we do not recognize moments of discouragement, and if we don't resolve them, they accumulate and gain intensity and force until finally we can be overcome with a spirit of discouragement, which can manifest itself as a spirit of despair. And all of us have experienced this. We've all felt the gap. But the difference between people who are victorious and people who get stuck depends entirely upon how a person responds to discouragement. Now, if you've been here for the last few weeks, we have been talking about a lot of uncomfortable feelings. We've been talking about insecurity and fear and shame, guilt, condemnation. And what we've said is that these bad feelings are part of God's good creation, and they function as kind of like an early warning system, an alarm system. So if you're driving down the road and something lights up on your dashboard, it's telling you that something is wrong in your car. And that's how God has designed us to experience bad feelings. It's intended to alert us to something that has gone awry in our hearts, minds, or relationships so that we can do something about it. And so the healthy way to deal with discouragement is to experience, is that when we experience it, first of all, to acknowledge it, to be able to be honest with ourselves and say, "I'm feeling pretty discouraged right now," and then to pause long enough to get perspective and to problem solve. That was pretty good alliteration. I didn't even plan on this morning. Pause to pray, to get perspective, and to problem solve. And so when we recognize the discouragement and we pause instead of ignoring it or compulsively reacting to get out of it, we can take time to redefine our expectations. Sometimes we're disappointed not because other people violated realistic expectations, but because we went into the situation with unrealistic expectations to begin with. And sometimes we need to redefine our expectations. Sometimes we need to redraw the boundaries, to reassess our priorities, so that we can together find ways to create solutions and to move forward. But this isn't easy. That's why therapists can charge so much money. And that's why they'll never go out of business. And that's why people constantly call me and ask to meet in my office for pastoral care. Because dealing with these uncomfortable feelings, including feelings of discouragement, it's very, very difficult. And most people take more convenient routes. And so you might know someone who deals with discouragement by putting on a smile and acting like nothing's wrong. And we can tell, right? Say, "What's wrong?" "Oh, nothing. God's good all the time. Things are just, life is good. Right? Nothing's wrong. Just smile and go through life." And let me tell you, churchy people are the most guilty of this, right? And I'm not calling you churchy, but you know who I'm talking about, right? We get around people, and that was sarcasm. This includes me too, right? We're all churchy people here, but some people don't like to hang out with us because we have this sometimes we act like everything is great and we have a Pollyannish view of life and we're not honest about our struggles and we're not transparent about our hurts and our brokenness. And we just put on a smile and we think that loving people means not making anybody mad, which is not a definition of love. If that were the case, Jesus would not have been without sin. But we assume that being a good Jesus follower means just being sweet all the time and never upsetting anybody. It's people-pleasing. And then when we get discouraged, we don't even want to acknowledge that we're discouraged because we're scared that someone might get upset with us. And if someone gets upset with us, they're going to say we're not loving. And if we're not loving, then we're not like Jesus. And if we're not like Jesus, then we're going to hell, right? So we uniquely struggle with this. And one of my calls to Christians is if you want people to believe anything that you say, you better be honest about your good qualities and your growing edges. Don't hide the bad stuff, because people will think that you're inauthentic. But I'm getting off topic here. So we acknowledge it. Healthy way to do this is we acknowledge the discouragement, and we speak the truth in love to those we're involved with, and then we process it in a healthy way. But people that don't deal with discouragement in a healthy way, they put on a smile and they act like everything is okay. And eventually, and you know this probably from experience as I do, the discouragement becomes a burden that is too heavy to carry. And when it caves in on you, when that burden makes you collapse, you are going to get a deadly cocktail of resentment and despair. Resentment and despair. And this can manifest itself in many ways. It can be angry outbursts. I think of the 1950s shows, Leave It to Beaver, when mom's always dressed up with her makeup on and is always doing everything right and sweet. And then I imagine other scenes of women just losing it and taking the plate with the dinner and slamming it against the wall and breaking it into a million pieces and saying, "Dad, you're driving me crazy!" Never uttering a word for 30 years. So it can manifest itself in angry outbursts. It can also manifest itself as passive-aggressive jabs. This is the family that is engaged in a cold war and everybody's smiling and acting like it's awesome. Jokes that hurt. People being late all the time for dates. A burned dinner. A child who goes and gets drunk. Acting out in passive-aggressive ways. It can also manifest itself and hopeless resignation, depression, and yes, even self-hatred. I have counseled people that have dealt with discouragement their whole life, and after years and years and years, when they talk to me, they literally hate themselves because they never stood up and spoke their truth. And so instead of being angry at others, they turn it on themselves. And they devour themselves with negative thoughts and self-destructive patterns. So if we know what discouragement is, and we know that there are healthy ways and unhealthy ways of dealing with it, what do we do as Christians? And I want to say that as Christians, we understand, because we believe that every human being is created in the image of God, and that the feelings that you have in and of themselves are part of God's good creation. So we don't have a problem if we understand our value as children of God, created in the image of God. We don't have a problem acknowledging that disappointment is a normal part of being human. And it's a gift when it sets off an alarm that tells us something is wrong and motivates us to do something about it. It's part of God's good creation. And when we experience it, we don't have to pretend as if everything is okay. There is a Bible verse that is often misused because people misinterpret it and use it as a weapon. But it's a good verse if you take it in its entirety. And that is, we're called to speak the truth, what? In love. So you speak your truth, but you do it in a way that is loving and respectful. And rather than pretending like everything is okay, we can process our disappointment in healthy ways. But as I just mentioned, that's really, really hard. And this is the last message in this series. If you missed any of them, you can go back and get them on YouTube or iTunes. But what should be clear by now is that whether we're dealing with anger or shame or fear or discouragement, whatever we're dealing with, we are called to deal with these feelings in a way that honors God, but we don't have the ability in and of ourselves to do it. And if you are relying upon your own wits and your own willpower and your own strength to deal with these feelings in the way that we've been talking about, in a way that honors God, you're going to experience a lot of failure and you're going to be discouraged in your Christian walk. What we learn is that we are not strong enough to deal with these overwhelming feelings and problems on our own. We need help. We need God's help. I'm going to give pretty soon a series on forgiveness. It's coming down the pipe in a few months. And what I'm going to say to you, you know, is that there are some people that have hurt you so bad, it is impossible for you to forgive them. Impossible. But God can work a miracle in your life and can forgive them through you. And the only reason that I mention that is because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about seeking God's help so that we can draw on the strength of the Holy Spirit to not only know what's going on and to get solutions, but to have the perspective and the power to actually do something about it. And you can't do it on your own. So, if you are going to deal with discouragement in a way that is healthy for you, in a way that honors God and honors your relationships, you're going to have some help from the Lord. You're going to have to draw close to God. So the question is, how do I do that? How do I draw close to God? Well, we find an answer in Psalm 100, verse 4. It's on the worship screen here. Enter his gates. Read this with me, church. With thanksgiving, and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. We draw close to God by choosing gratitude and by counting our blessings. Conversely, there is no quicker way to push yourself out of the presence of God than to focus on everything that is wrong in your life. Now, I'm not talking about the normal, healthy practice of reflecting on your day and asking what went right and what went wrong, and then addressing the problems and trying to do something about it so you don't repeat them. We have to have times for that. But what I am talking about is being narrowly focused on the bad things in our lives. I'm talking about being hypnotized by pessimism. I'm talking about being consumed by stinking thinking. Do you know anybody like this? They're not very pleasant to be around. Woe is me. If there's anything that could possibly, it sounds like a, did anybody see Hee-Haw when they were growing up? Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Oh, I mean, everything's horrible. Life stinks. If anything could possibly go wrong, it's going to go wrong to me, let me tell you. And this is self-destructive. Life will give you what you focus on. I want you to say that with me. Life will give you what you focus on. And if you focus on the bad, you're going to get bad. Now again, I'm not talking about a Pollyannish view of life to where you're not considering your problems and working through them. I'm talking about getting stuck in pessimism and having blinders on so that you lose sight of all the good things in your life. If you focus on the bad, you're going to get the bad. But the good news is that you can make another choice. You can choose what you're going to focus on. You can draw close to the presence of God by choosing gratitude, counting your blessings. You guys remember that song, don't you? I grew up in the Salvation Army, and we sang a lot of the same songs that you sing because our founder, William Booth, was a good Methodist. He was a free Methodist, but he was still a Methodist. Count your blessings, Name them one by one. You can say it with me. And it will surprise you what the Lord has done. So I want to challenge you this morning. If you are struggling with discouragement, if you're being consumed with pessimism and stinking thinking, I want you to do what many addicts have taught us to do in the 12-step program. And that is to make a gratitude list. And I want you to get a piece of paper and I want you to write what I'm thankful for. And I want you to write it down. Something powerful happens when you write something down. And I want you to list all of the good things that you were experiencing in that moment. Is anybody breathing this morning? Can I get an amen? You're alive. Could you get out of bed this morning? It might have been hard, but if you're here, you had to get out of bed. Could you basically take care of yourself this morning? Maybe with a little help, but basically take care of yourself this morning. Could you get to a place that you are surrounded by friends and people that love you and people that will do life with you? Do you have a car to drive? Do you have medicine to take for your ailments? You see, everything that we have is a gift from God. And if we get focused on the negative, we will forget how many blessings far exceed the things that discourage us. And we need to be reminded. And I don't want you to stop there. I want you, after you list all the things in your present life that is a good gift from God, I want you to go back and I want you to think about all those times in your life when you thought it was over, when you didn't think you were going to make it, when you thought that failure was going to be certain and that failure was going to have the last word and you didn't know how you were going to get through, and somehow, some way, God helped you and got you to where you are today. Am I talking to anybody this morning? Yeah. To be able to say, God's not only blessing me now, but lest I forget, God has brought me through some pretty bad stuff. Part of original sin is forgetfulness. Part of our fallen human nature is that God blesses us in ridiculous ways, and we say, God, thank you so much. And then the next day, we get amnesia. We forget about it. Write it down. Count your blessings. Name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. And I want to move toward a close this morning by reminding you of an important truth. And again, this is something you already know. People are going to disappoint you. The people that you love the most, the people that you trust the most, are going to disappoint you. I, as your pastor, am going to disappoint you because I'm a human being. That's part of what it means to be a human being. That we are going to be disappointed by others. And there are times when you're going to go through some really bad stuff in your life, and your circumstances are going to bring you to your knees, and you're going to experience discouragement. But hear this, my friends. There's only one person who can choose a spirit of despair, and that is you. Let me explain. The opposite of discourage, if you look at the word, you erase the dis, it's courage. And the Bible says over and over again, be courageous. Take courage. Somebody say, take courage. Take it. Keep up. Say it with me. Keep up your courage. Notice that courage is not a magic trick that God does for you. Courage is something that you must take up. It is something that you must keep up. And we do this by focusing on the presence of God. We do this by focusing on our blessings. We do this by drilling into the promises of God that we've talked about throughout this series. And we keep up our courage. And if we choose to do this, then we'll be blessed. But not only is courage something that you have to take up and keep up, discouragement is also something that you can take up and keep up. And if you do that, you will not have the perspective And without the perspective, you will not have the wisdom to solve your own problems. Nor will you have the power to do it. Because just like in the Austin Powers movie where they suck his mojo out, the minute that you focus on the bad and you take up discouragement and you keep up discouragement, it's going to consume you as a spirit of despair, and you're going to lose perspective, and it's going to suck out all of your energy, the energy and the power that you need to work a solution that you won't have access to because you've lost perspective. But to the contrary, if you choose to take up and keep up your courage by drawing close to God, by focusing on the blessings and trusting His promises and drawing near to Him, then it will be different. Because then you will discover that standing beside you the entire time was the great physician. You will discover that the entire time, the one who does have the power and the perspective to help you has been with you all along. And then you can turn your attention to Him and you can say, God, help me to redefine my expectations. Are they realistic? Are they godly? Say, God, help me to redraw the boundaries so that I'm not giving too much of myself away, especially not to people that are not trustworthy. If you didn't hear that sermon, you need to go back on YouTube and look up The Wise, the Foolish, and the Evil. It will change your life. But we've got to redraw boundaries. You say, Lord, help me to forgive the people that have disappointed me. Because you can't move on unless you can find a way to forgive. And then, God, give me the wisdom and the perspective that I need to come up with real solutions. And then give me the courage, the strength, and the hope to work that problem and move forward. And when we do that, we find that God does for us what we're incapable of doing for ourselves. But you have a role to play. So take up your courage and keep up your courage. Last word of encouragement. Remember that the Bible says the Christian life is a race that we run. And it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And somebody needs to hear that because you're discouraged. You're feeling like you're running really, really hard and working really, really hard, and you're not getting anywhere fast. And it feels like one step forward and two steps back. And we have to have the presence of mind through the assistance of God to be able to get that perspective that says, "This, I'm in it for the long haul. It doesn't have to be perfect today. I'm going to fail today. I'm going to be brought to my knees today. I'm going to do this discipleship sometimes right and sometimes wrong." We have the big picture. And it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And here is what is even better news. Are you ready, church? Your race time doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you finish first or third or tenth. It doesn't matter if you're the last one to cross the finish line. The whole point is running the race. And you don't run alone. Because not only do you have God to run with you, not only is Jesus your running partner, but look around. Look around. Everybody in this room, as Christians, we run together. So I want you to look at someone next to you or beside you, and I want you to say, "You're my running partner." Tell them. They need to hear it. Because they might feel like they're running alone. Now, do it to the person on the other side. "You're my running partner. We're going to run this together." So, you're going to face times when you feel like, "I can't run anymore," and I'm going to tell you, well, then walk. Walk for a little while, but press on. And sometimes you're going to fall down, and you're going to need someone to help pick you up. And until then, you might have to crawl. But just keep moving forward and crawl. But there are times when you're going to be injured, and you're going to have to take a break, and you're going to have to stop running and get some help from a friend or a counselor. Take the time that you need, get the help that you need, and then start building back up and start walking and running again. And there are some times when you're going to fall on your face and you're going to be that far from the finish line and you're going to be hanging on by the last fingernail on your hand and you're going to have to pull that fingernail out just to get yourself across the line. Dig in and press on. Because Jesus says it's worth it. Even better, Jesus says, you're worth it. You're worth it. God will get you through the discouragement if you will let Him guide you and if you'll do it His way. You please pray with me? Gracious God, I pray for everyone here who is dealing with discouragement.